Good morning. This is Kate from ADHD Kids Can Thrive. And today I have a very special guest. Her name is Argavan, and she is the founder of Baby Steps Nutrition. You can find her in all the popular spots on social media. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and is a registered dietitian nutritionist. She has over 13 years of experience working with families, infants, toddlers, older children, and teens in both the inpatient and outpatient settings. I'm so happy to have you here today. Argavan has agreed to talk to us primarily regarding nutrition when it comes to children who have ADHD. So that's going to be the primary focus for our conversation today. Okay, so let's get started. So when a parent discovers that their child has been diagnosed with ADHD, what kind of nutritional changes do you recommend that parents start to put in place if their child is struggling?
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I love talking about this topic, especially with families. So excited to have this conversation.
Good. I'm happy to have you here. Okay, so let's start with what is the first step we should do once we figure out our child's been diagnosed with ADHD? Do we need to pay attention to their nutrition? And if so, what kind of changes do you recommend?
Okay, first thing I want to tell families is getting any kind of diagnosis or having a label for your child can feel so overwhelming, right? So you can go on Dr. Google and you can search, and there'll be so much information out there. And this is why it's so important to look at each child, each family, with an individualized, compassionate approach. There's no one size fits all. I mean, we're going to be talking about some general guidelines, but this is why I think it's important to work with a qualified professional with experience in pediatrics, because it really is so important to look at each child individually. Now, that being said, yes. So depending on the care teams and the management of your child, there are definitely some things we want to work with families on. One of the main things a lot of research has come out and looked at are just what's in the child's diet. What is the child eating, right? So the first and foremost are artificial food colors, right? Are there aspartame, MSG, nitrates, nitrites? Right. So these are all the things like that may be hiding in food. That's the number one thing I want to look at is how much is the child having ultra processed food? So that's really kind of the key. And we start from there, because before we start looking in at certain nutrients and, you know, common dietary allergens and whatnot, we want to look at that. Right. So we want to look at the child's overall diet, like what, and this is where it's important for families to get really curious about what their child eats, what their child likes to eat, what foods their child is avoiding, because I think that's very telling of the nutrients that the child is getting in the first place.
Oh, interesting. What does avoiding signal?
Yes. So there's, you know, we hear picky eating, but there's also something called ARFID, which is it's a restrictive. So this is a very specific medical term. And so this is children who are restricting certain foods, and that's a behavioral thing. So just kind of as a general rule is first 4 years of life, right? So your child may have picky eating tendencies and they may be showing picky eating behavior. If that continues on after about the first 4 years, this is where you really want to start, you know, doing some investigative work. You may have to work with a feeding therapist to really understand like what is going on with your child. There could be all kinds of things like it could be sensory issues. It could be, you know, like maybe a traumatic event happened with choking when the child was younger. So they're using that as a protective mechanism. There could be all kinds of things going on. But if it's continuing on as the child is getting older, then there's definitely things that we need to be looking at, like are there gut issues? Are there undiagnosed food allergies, sensitivities, right? Those are the really things we want to be not figuring it out on our own, but we want to be reaching out to other qualified healthcare professionals in pediatrics.
Right. And so ADHD is a very broad umbrella, but I feel like the
Yes.
things that come under ADHD that are the things that make it hard for kids trying to get through school is their mood, behavior, right, can be disruptive in the classroom. And then anxiety could be really high, or they could be depressed, right? I guess all those things play into mood. Focus would be not paying attention, daydreaming. So, like, is it true that food and nutrition can play a big role in modifying and improving these symptoms for these kids?
Yes, and I'm glad you said modify because sometimes people will again go on Dr. Google and think that nutrition can completely replace the medical management of ADHD. And based on the majority of studies, nutrition, the healthy eating, and we're going to get into talking about what that looks like, but can be a huge supplement to the overall management of a child with ADHD. So they work hand in hand, and this includes certain nutrients to go with, if the child is on medication, for example, like older children specifically, and then, providing the right nutrients where most likely there are nutrient deficiencies. So they definitely do go hand in hand. And this is why we want to really understand, and it's a case-by-case basis, like what medication, for example, is the child on? Because there are lots of studies to show children who are on specific medication, for example, yes, the appetite is decreased. For example, like if there's iron deficiency that's undiagnosed, that can reduce the effectiveness of certain medications that the child is on. So this is where nutrition and everything else really play a key role, but together, like in supplementation form.
Yep.
And
Okay.
food is food, not food. But we're going to talk about supplements as well.
Yeah. Okay. So, moving right along, and like the kind of food, is it important for a child who struggles with mood and ADHD to be gluten-free and dairy-free, or is that an individual discovery that a
Yes.
parent would make with a nutritionist?
Yes. So this is where you want to be, first of all, looking at what your child eats. So the common deficiencies that we see in children with ADHD, and this is again where you want to get the right test to make sure that they are. So iron deficiency is a big one.
Okay.
Zinc deficiency can indicate like inattentiveness, right? So if you're seeing that in your child, that's something you want to be looking at. Magnesium is another one. So magnesium is important in neurotransmission, neuroregulation. So if you feel like your child is constantly distracted, hyperactivity, right? Those are all the things we see in kids with ADHD. It can signal magnesium deficiency. So iron, zinc, magnesium, and then the essential fatty acids are so important because they play a huge role in brain health. So again, going back to like the inattention, the impulsivity, the hyperactivity, most likely essential fatty acid deficiency. So I would say before even taking those things out, it's important to focus on these key nutrients that most kids need, but especially kids who are struggle with ADHD. We want to be looking at what are they eating in their diet? Like, are they eating enough foods that provide these nutrients? And if we're seeing a lot of these, behavioral things, those may indicate that the child is indeed having deficiencies. And then we need to focus on providing food first, right? I'm a big believer in food first. And then if they're not able to get those nutrients from foods, then we can look at things like supplements, and then, some other just dietary changes throughout the day.
Yeah, okay. And as fatty acids, is that fish oil?
Yeah, so that's so there's eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid. So those are things like salmon and mackerel, trout, walnut, sunflower seeds. If someone is vegetarian, we can talk about tofu, soybeans, and then really the healthy fats. So like avocado oil, right? Adding in coconut oil. Those are all the things that are great to include more of, because that is a very common deficiency in most children, is that they're not getting this the omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay. And you can do that through diet, nutrition, I guess, instead of diet, nutrition and supplements as well.
Yeah, so if you're noticing, like a lot of children are probably not getting enough, like for example, fish in their diet, nuts and seeds, then yes, you want to look at a fish oil supplement. And with any supplement, I think it's important to note here, you want to make sure it's third-party tested, right? Supplements are a multi-billion dollar industry for a reason, but you want to make sure if you're paying for something, especially something that you're going to be on long term, that it's good quality, that it's third-party tested. And you're getting what it claims that you're getting.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving, ADHD kids can be feel complex, I think, to parents. And I will say it's not uncommon for a child with ADHD also to have like GI issues, or they might have food allergies. As a parent, like what do you recommend? I guess going to a specialist like a nutritionist. Is do you start with the GI issues and the food allergies and then and not worry and hope that if you resolve those kind of issues, the ADHD symptoms will get better? What do you recommend as a strategy for a parent whose child has like many things going on with them?
Yeah, so first we would want to look at, GI issues. So when I see a new family, for example, for the first time, I would want them to have a food diary. So when you have, and it's not just reporting like what my child, for example, ate last week, but if you have a very specific list of this is what my child eats and these are the symptoms, that will give healthcare professionals a better idea of patterns. And a lot of the time, like there'll be some things that we can really look at and start with. You're right. Like sometimes some kids have undiagnosed food allergies. So they may have been consuming certain foods that their body is reacting to, but the family, with well-meaning and intention, don't know about it, right? Or it could be something that's hidden in certain, right now we have processed and ultra-processed foods. And those food manufacturers are very sneaky. So they could be in those foods that the child is consuming a lot of. So that's why we want to be really looking at like what is my child eating from the moment that they wake up to the minute that they fall asleep, and then what are those things like we're seeing, right? So are we seeing like constipation, for example, is huge. So if your child is not pooping every single day, right? Sometimes we see kids that poop every 4 or 5 days, and that means they're not detoxing. So there's something going on. They're not getting enough fiber. That's something we want to be looking at. For example, if they eat certain things and they're having rashes or hives, right? Something we want to be looking at could be the difference between a food sensitivity and a food allergy. Weight is another one, right? So is your child underweight? So are they getting enough calories, but also lots of, whether they're underweight or overweight, they could have a lot of nutrient deficiencies, like those ones that we talked about. So we really want to be looking at based on what your child is eating. And the things that we're seeing and the questions we're asking families, it's always going to be very telling of where we can start. But again, it's different for every child.
Yeah. Okay. And then I'm sure you have recommendations. I hear a lot on the underweight thing that a parent
Yes.
will decide to do ADHD meds, which can make a child not hungry during the school day because it suppresses their appetite. But then the child might be not even into food eating. And so they're very underweight or they're not gaining weight because they're not hungry during most of the day. So
Yeah,
what do
so
you recommend?
that's the challenge. Yeah, and a lot of studies are showing anywhere between like 30% to 60% of children who are on medication are experiencing the loss of appetite, and they also be at maybe at having other things like abdominal pain or headaches. And so that's where it's tricky because if they're having their medication, say first thing in the morning, right? And they're going off to school, so most likely when they come home from school, they're going to be hangry, right? So if the effects of the medication has worn off. So this is where we want to really boost the nutrition of the foods that they are having, right? So for example, in the morning, if they're having small amount of food, like for example, if they're having toast, we want to be adding some kind of an almond butter or avocado just to boost the calories. If you are cooking, you want to be using, liberal fat, for example, like butter and or oils. Dips are always a great idea, right? So
Yeah.
cheese, hollandaise sauce, sour cream, instead of using, for example, like water to cook soups. You want to be having something with cream or something, high with high calories. Oatmeal, for example, another one, instead of with water, you can use milk. You can also, boost the baked goods that you make, like healthy muffins, cookies, or pancakes with, say, an extra egg or a dry milk powder. Smoothies are great. So you can use something like flax oil or frozen fruit like mango, peanut butter, honey, whole milk yogurt. So even the foods that they do eat, there are ways to increase the nutrition density of those foods.
And be more satisfying. Those all sound like
And be more.
delicious suggestions.
Absolutely. And then the second one, just being structure of meals, right? So we want to teach our kids to be hungry and listen to their hunger cues. A lot of kids who have ADHD tend to snack all day, and so they're not really hungry for a set meal, but going, and this is going to be a work in progress, right? This is why I call my practice baby steps, because it's about picking one thing and then using that one thing and working on that one thing. We certainly don't want to overwhelm families. Life is overwhelming as it is, but picking one thing and then starting with that. And like structured meals is a great one. So like a breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then two snacks. So every 2 to 3 hours, right? For example, for younger kids, and then 3 to 4 hours for school age kids. This is again teaching your child that their body to have the sensations of fullness, and then what does, emptiness or hunger feel like? And this way, it also gives our digestive system just more time to clear food, and then hormones are, activated, saying I'm hungry. So this is why those set structured meals as much as possible are important. And then we can talk about positive feeding practices to just develop positive, lifelong healthy habits with food.
Yeah. So how do you do that? Just by.
Yes. So I know parents are very busy, right? Well, it's just like the daily grind. But what I always recommend is if you can pick one meal in a day, and it's usually going to be dinner time, to create a positive mealtime experience. So if you can have a caregiver sit with a child and just, so that's the time where you're talking, you're catching up in the day. It's more about the pleasure of eating rather than just, eating for calories and eating on the go, and trying to take away that pressure and that control, and just like, this is good. I feel good when I'm sitting with my family and having conversations around food. When you can, it'd be great to get kids more involved in the kitchen, right? You can get really young kids involved, and then as the child gets older, having them say go grocery shopping with you, having them have a say in, what they like to eat, coming up with a little calendar that you put on the fridge, learning about food, right? The importance of variety. And this is again a work in progress, because the more kids develop this autonomy and independence around food, the more likely that they're able to make better choices as they get older.
That's great. And would you recommend, I mean, just even listening to you about the processed food, it sounds so scary, right? But it's so easy to buy
Yes.
and just stock in our fridge and our cupboards. And probably the best policy listening to you is just not to buy it, right? To try to have the least amount of processed food available to your kids as possible. And I think as they become teenagers, that becomes more challenging too, as they start to drive and move around independently. And I think, is it common for teenagers to just crave junk food? Is that like a hormonal thing?
It is. And it's also a social thing, right? We know
Yeah.
eating is a very social activity. So this is why, when we can, to start working with younger kids, because when the kids are younger, it's all about role modeling, right? Our kids are looking to us everything we say and we do. So we can't say and do other things and then expect our kids to do the opposite. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. So when they're younger, right, conversations, excitement, enjoyment, pleasure, and teaching our kids as they get older. So like you mentioned, when they're older, yes, there's going to be more access. So my number one rule is just, if you don't want to have an argument or a power struggle around it, just don't have it in the house, right? Because that's also setting those expectations. That's also teaching our kids, like, if it's not in the house, then we're likely to grab something else, right? I love like charcuterie boards, for example. When the kids come home after school, it doesn't have to be fancy, it doesn't have to be Pinterest worthy, but just when you put out a board that has variety and it has color, and it gives the child that choice to choose what they want to eat, right? Because we never can make them, but we can offer certain foods, and it's their job to choose what foods they'd like to eat. Those are all the ways that we're showing them, that we're role modeling, like these are the better choices, right? We're not using good or bad, but we're using sort of the better choices, the more nutrient dense, right? Foods that support growth and development, foods that make us strong, foods that make us, have bowel movements every day, sleep better. Those are the conversations we want to be having around food. And then as they get older, yes, they're going to be outside of the house more. They're going to be having more access to those foods. But at least, if we've had those conversations, if they have a positive relationship with food, then they're more likely to say, okay, I'm going to have maybe some of, certain foods, like the processed foods and the ultra processed foods, but that's not going to be the majority of my diet because I know how I feel when I eat just those foods, right? And I want to be having the best nutrition for myself, again, to have good sleep and to be able to have more activity and to be strong. And the conversation around that versus just negative association with all food.
All food, yeah. Well, this was really helpful.
It's overwhelming, which I totally understand for families. And this is where I say, if you really are struggling day in and day out, do reach out to a qualified healthcare professional that has experience in pediatrics, because you don't need to do it alone. There's a lot of great resources out there, but again, with online too, it could be very overwhelming. But just
Yes,
reach
I
out.
think
That's what we're there for.
that's a great idea. And I feel like online too, like everyone has their opinion,
Yes.
obviously, right? And so
Yes.
if you're listening to all these different opinions, it almost puts you into inaction because you're
Yes.
like, this is just too much. And everybody's saying something slightly, they're from their own point of view.
Yes, and that could do more harm than good, right? So this is
Yes.
where, especially when you work with children, a lot of people will immediately focus on, for example, elimination diets. And we don't want to do that. Like when I work with a family, it's like, what can my child eat, right? What can we eat as a family? And that's another point I wanted to make. It's for the whole family. We don't want to really isolate one individual unless it's medically necessary. But these are all the habits, all the changes, all the things like the whole family can do, right? Focus on, nutrient dense foods, focus on eating together as a family, focus on having conversations around food, getting everyone involved. It's a team effort, right? When you're working with kids, because you're working with the parents and the siblings as well.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so Argavon, do you provide your services to anyone who, like anyone in the world? I
Yes,
mean, the
I
internet is
offer.
global, so I'm asking if
Yes.
anybody wanted to reach you from across the sea, they could, right?
Yes, I
Okay.
offer Zoom virtual sessions as well as, well, in person would be more local, but definitely I can be found anywhere in the world. If you go to babystepsnutrition.com, or as you had mentioned at the beginning, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all under Baby Steps Nutrition, you can contact me and I would love to work with you because parenting is so hard and I've learned so much along the way. And my approach is it's a partnership, and I really want to help empower you, and just take out the stress and the frustration out of parenting, which we all deal with already, right?
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Absolutely. Well, this was wonderful information, and I really appreciate your time today.